Hey, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. We're in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm here with Pete Leffler of the band Chevelle. Pete, thanks for joining us.
Sure, man.
Hey, why don't you tell me a little bit about this guitar?
This is what I'm playing right now. It's a Fender Subsonic. I don't know if they make these anymore, so it's kind of a, it's probably like 10 or 15 years old. But, you know, I like to play baritones because I do a lot of drop tuning, drop A sharp and drop B. So this guy's working out really nicely for me, and it's nicely balanced too. So
what do you tune down to on this?
This one's in drop B.
B.
Yeah.
And are you using a lot of tunings through the tour?
I use primarily four. So yeah, I guess that is kind of a lot.
Yeah.
A sharp, B, C sharp, and also a drop C.
So, drop C.
Yeah.
So have you modded this at all? Is it, have you changed out the pickups?
I did. I changed out the pickups. You know, I like to use Seymour Duncan pickups in there. And these guys, I'm actually going to keep modifying this. I want to put like a chrome pickguard on here, make it real flashy and glitzy and glamoury. So, yeah, it works for me, man.
Cool.
I dig it.
Now, is this what you're using on the albums as well as on the
I did. Mm-hmm. I used some of them on the album. But, you know, I use a lot of different ones. And in the studio, so, you know, you can control things so much more than live.
Right.
So, I mean, I'll use just a whole host of things.
Yeah. Well, your studio tracks are like huge. I mean, it's got to be so hard to reproduce that live, you know, with one guy.
It is. It's kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, say, I don't know. I mean, how many, I don't know, on tracks, how many guitars do you usually lay down live?
Live?
Oh, I'm sorry. In the studio.
Yeah, in the studio. Well, I mean, usually for verses, it's two, and for the choruses, you lift it with two more.
Yeah.
So about four.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
And you're covering all that alone.
Yeah, man, it's daunting. It's about 13-hour days for a month straight.
Yeah, so, yeah, I bet. Well, very cool. Well, hey, let's look at a few more. Okay, so Pete, tell me about this guy.
This one is actually it's another Strat, but it's a mahogany body and an ebony neck.
Oh, cool.
So it's a little bit thicker and heavier, which I enjoy for drop C.
But this isn't long scale. This is like a normal Strat
exactly.
scale, right?
This is just a normal, I think it's 25 and a half scale, right around there. So, but for drop C, you don't need a baritone for that.
Huh. Yeah. What do you know what gauge you're running on that?
Yeah, I run 13 through 65.
Oh.
So it's pretty heavy for, you know, like the normal kid running into the guitar center and picking up a pack of strings. He would normally start out like that, but it works for me.
Does this neck, I mean, having that much, those thick strings on it, did you have to do anything to it? Or, I mean, intonate, of course, but.
Yeah, I mean, no, really. I mean, it's made pretty sturdy, so didn't really have to do much modifications to it. I mean, just adjustments here and there.
Cool, and there are Duncan pickups in this one as well?
Yeah.
Okay, Pete, this is a pretty modest pedal board. I imagined it was going to be
huge.
Huge, yeah.
Big MIDI foot switch that breaks down when it rains or every other day.
Yeah.
You know what? I mean, I know there's great stuff out there, and I've gone the MIDI route before, and then it got complicated, and I had some issues. So I kind of went old school, and I just use an AB box. I use on my amp for clean and dirty, and then I have my Sans amp, my trusty Sans amp for overdrive and certain fuzzier tones.
Oh, cool. How long have you had that? Is that an old school one you've had forever?
You know what? I have a bunch of those old school ones, but we keep, you know, you have to rotate them, they break, things like that.
Yeah.
But so I can make do with the new stuff too. It's pretty cool.
Cool.
So I got my EQ pedal for, you know, staying on the dirty channel and, you know, just dropping the level a little bit.
Sure.
I got my Phase 90, which I love, for solos and things like that. I got my Trem pedal for songs like The Meddler off of our last album.
Right.
And of course, my Holy Grail, which is, I've gone through a few of those too. But I kind of got into reverb recently. And so I use that a lot live for solos or you know, for vibe, things like that.
Right, yeah. Right. And no delay.
No delay. That's Dean's territory. Yeah. Our bass player.
Yeah.
He's messing with the delay.
Yeah. That's but even tracking, don't you? I mean, your albums have delay on it.
Not a whole lot. I mean, every once in a while you pop it in for a little bit of taste, but yeah, I mean, we don't use a whole lot of it.
Huh. So, very cool.
Yeah. I mean, this is a couple of things. I use a wah pedal, and I don't know if people have seen this, but, you know, how many people have seen a bypass wah pad that, it's pretty amazing. You can just, I don't know if you can see that, but when you put your foot on it, it activates it and the light comes on. And then when you lift your foot off, it turns it off. So it makes it really quick and easy in and out for the wah.
Wow, that's great. So is that an aftermarket thing that?
It is. It's aftermarket, so.
Well, very cool. Wow, yeah. That really makes sense. Yeah. And I like that you got the Phase 90 in that classic Van Halen setting where it's like on the slow.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the show, I'll crank it up and get the crazy UFO sounds going.
Yeah.
But, you know, for live, it works slower.
Yeah. In the Peterson tuner, I know those have like a sweetener on it. Do you use any of that stuff or just running on the straight?
Yeah, just straight. I'm actually not even sure what it's set on, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it works for me.
Yeah. Perfect. Man, that's a simple rig.
It is. Very simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've added a few things, but, you know, and I have a bunch of ZVEX pedals that I love and I record with, and lots of fuzz pedals, but they're so hard to maintain out on the road because I seem to, like, when I kick them on, I get a lot of distortion, a lot of the bad feedback that I don't want to use live.
Right.
So I use them in the studio a lot, but it's hard to integrate them into my live set right now. But
yeah, and you run a pretty loud volume. Your stage volume is...
It's not too bad. It's, you know, it bleeds into my vocal mic a lot, so I keep it a little bit moderate.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Hey, we're right by your cabinets.
Yeah.
Perry, let's talk about these.
Yeah, these are my Mesa cabs. We antiqued them the other day.
Yeah, very cool.
Before we came out on the road, you know, made them look a little vintagey and makes the light dance on them a little bit.
Yeah. No. What do you know? What model number these are? Or what?
Oh man, they're just like the. I think they're just the Recto cabs.
Recto cabs.
Yeah. And, you know, vintage 30s. I'm sure.
Vintage 30s. Whatever came in them.
Yeah, I just use stock. You know.
Yeah. They sound great.
Cool.
Sound great, and I love this whole crazy aesthetic of the setup.
Yeah. You know, we're just trying to. Yeah. Trying to mess with people.
Yeah, it's cool. Know. It's great.
It's Dean's new addition to my amp, so
nice.
He's got a nice addition over there too. We keep adding it as we go, and he's good at it.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Go creepy or go home, I guess.
You know? Right. So Pete, your amps are actually back there, but you mind just telling us a little bit about them?
Yeah, man, I've used Mesa Boogie Mark IVs ever since I was like 15 years old.
Wow.
And you know, I love them. I know how to set them in a pinch. You know, when you go up to Europe, sometimes you have to backline things, and I just you know, I can quickly glance at it and get it close, and then go out and throw down. So I know the amp really well, and it works for me. They did come out with a Mark V, which I love as well. I just don't have it in a rack form, and my amps are set up so nicely. So I'm gonna probably try out the Mark V a little bit more, but right now these work.
So, Pete, we put on the Premier Guitar Facebook that we are going to do a rig run around with you and open it up to questions from fans.
Yeah.
And a few of them, a ton of them actually wrote in, but here's a few that I wanted to ask you. Why did the band switch to drop C tuning?
Yeah, well, we went up in tuning because of the, you know, the tightness of it, I noticed. One day I was like, started out in drop C, then we went down to drop B, and then drop A sharp. And I was like, well, why not go up for a change? So we did the whole album in drop C, and turns out it's just a tighter, heavier, chunkier feel for that music, this album. It worked really well, and it can still be just as heavy. So, I mean, that's why I did it.
Right. Yeah. Were you tracking with multiple guitars in C, or did you... Did you have some in standard as well, or were they?
Well, no, it was mostly just drop C.
Oh,
so
cool.
The whole album.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's huge sounding. So,
yeah. And it was easier to control the fuzz pedals too, which I used, you know, just a whole bunch of vintage ones that Barisi had, and then a bunch from my collection too. Really? So, yeah.
What were, like, say, a few of your favorite weirdo fuzz pedals?
Fuzz Factory from ZVEX, and you know, there were some old MXR and some weird. There's one called a UFO that I love, and I actually don't own that. I need to go get it because I used it all over the record.
Yeah, they
it
should.
It was Barisi's. I was like, can I have this?
They should send you one now.
Yeah. I'll use it. But yeah, so C is easier to control it with fuzz for me.
Cool. Yeah. Another question is, ask about Pete's private baritone collection.
Yeah. Well, again, going back to those tunings, drop A sharp and things like that, I got really into baritone. So I would search Craigslist or eBay, and I just amassed this room full of baritones from, you know, old to new, Dan Electro, a bunch of Fender, a bunch that I built.
Oh, really?
And then, like, Gibson made some for a while. I've got a couple of those. So, I mean, it's funny, too, because now I have them and I use them, but now I'm going up in tunings. So
yeah.
I can use standard Fender scale now.
Right. Yeah. So if you were to guess, how many baritones do you think you have in your collection?
Oh, how many? It's not that many. It's probably 10.
10.
So, yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but you use them. I mean, it's seven. We've been seven records in.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just collect one here and there.
Yeah, right.
So.
Yeah, since, what, you guys formed in, what, 95?
Yeah,
right around Yeah. Pete, tell me about the new album.
Yeah. The new album just came out about 3 weeks ago, and I love playing every song. I think I want to do a whole night where we just play it from top to bottom.
Cool.
Maybe in Vegas.
Yeah. We'll
do that. That'd be good. It's called Vaga Gorla, and it just means the gargoyle, and I watched, like, crazy horror movies, and I just kind of, like, this album came out heavy and dark and kind of twisted, and I think you can hear it if you can hear it in the lyrics.
Very
so,
cool.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It just turned out really, really creepy.
Yeah, which explains the creepy motif.
Yeah,
here.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah, that's great. Well, hey, man, congratulations. Yeah. I hope you guys you've already sold all in your over 4 million albums total, which is huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to do nowadays. But,
when people, like, steal music, it makes it hard to do.
Granted, a lot of those were done years ago, you know, but, you know, it's still exciting to watch the Billboard chart when your album comes out and to see where it lands and things like that. But, you know, you can't necessarily gauge your success on that. It doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
So we gauge it by this stuff, you know, and playing the sold-out shows, which is what it's been,
tonight.
Which is very, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And how long is this tour going?
This is about a month.
Yeah. So just out for a month straight and then back.
Yep.
Great. Okay, we're here with Dean Bernardini from the band Chevelle. Dean, thanks so much for joining us.
Awesome. Glad to be here, bud.
Now, man, you started as a drummer, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And even on the latest album, you're playing drums on one of the tracks.
Right, yeah. I play drums on Ouija Board.
How cool.
And, it's great because, you know, it comes in handy. We do a lot of co-writing.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, it was kind of weird going from my drum background to playing bass. And kind of how it started was I was way too percussive, you know. I was kind of beating up my basses. And because of that, the Gibson Thunderbird was my first good fit. Because it was kind of a tank.
Yeah.
There's not a lot going on in it.
Yeah.
It's a neck-through bass. Because we have a lot of low tunings and stuff, like drop tunings.
Yeah.
And it seemed to hold the tunings better. And ever since that time, I've been trying to graduate to something has maybe a little better tone. Because I recorded the last four records with an Ibanez.
Oh, really?
Bass guitar, one of the BTB series. But it was a five string, and I played kind of low. So the neck was like, and we play a lot of stuff on the 12th fret.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, I couldn't play it live.
Right.
So, I don't know, I randomly found these Ibanezes.
What model is
this? This is the BTB 570.
Huh.
And, but they all, and they discontinued them, I think, a while ago, because I've only been able to find five.
Yeah, I've never seen one.
I've hunted them down for a long time. But the colors that they came in were kind of like crazy wood bursts, you know, and they're high gloss. And I build furniture and I finish furniture and I paint. You know, I'm an artist, you know, I do all that stuff. So it was natural for me to paint this guy. I paint a lot of Pete's guitars too. So I painted it, kind of murdered it out. As you can see, it's also a neck through.
Oh, very cool.
35 scale, which the Gibsons are not 35 scales. So I've wanted to do that, make that switch for a long time.
Right, and it probably handles the low tuning better.
Yeah, it handles them. It's a tuning tank. That was the one thing about the why I used the original BTB for the records is that the tunings, recording albums these days, especially we're going back to like 2-inch tape on this record and the last one before that, they're more performance based. And when the tunings start to go south, it's everything. You know, you can't, you got to do big chunks and hope that you're in, you know, and some engineers are pretty malicious about it, you know. So that particular bass had this type of a bridge where they were more independent, and I don't know, for me, maybe it's the way I strike or something, it worked, it was perfect for me. So, and then I also came up with these pick guards, so I put these pick guards on.
Very cool.
I made them, and then I just kind of started making multiple ones and throwing them on there.
It's
so
cool.
I wanted to dress it up a little bit.
Right, it almost looks like a John Lennon Gretsch kind of thing.
Yeah. It reminded me a little of the Thunderbirds. That's kind of why I put it on there.
Yeah, very cool. And did you switch out the pickups?
No, the pickups are Bartolones, and this is an active bass, which is another switch. So the original ones were all passive. And so this, right out of the gate, I had to change my tone and everything, but I knew it worked because we did it on the records and everything.
Right.
So it, I mean, I can't believe it actually took me that long to do it, but, you know, it was a process. So then I'm happy with the way that these look. So maybe you can bring me the gold one, Eric?
Gold one?
Oh, you got the green one. Yeah, I'll take that one. I'll take that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, come on in.
Yeah.
This is Eric.
Hey, Eric.
He just got out of jail.
Oh, cool.
So here's one. Did a green color on it with the black, you know, black pickguard.
And this has a maple neck and the other had a rosewood?
Correct, yeah.
Did you notice a big difference in tone?
Yes. Not a huge, but I do have to roll off, depending on the venue, I'll roll off a little top end. These are just brighter a little bit.
Yeah.
So I also put these on the lower tunings.
So the other one is in C, right?
That's C.
And this guy?
Well, this guy is in C sharp, but we only play one song. We play the red on it. And but I have a couple other ones. So I have five in rotation right now. And I have one for A sharp. And that I made sure that the maple neck goes on there.
Yeah.
And he's got a gold one here that has the ebony neck that's darker tone. I use that for B, I think, right? That's B? So that's drop B. So I tried to do it in relation, but I could only find two of them with that neck.
Oh, very cool.
These are more common, the ones with the maple.
Wow.
So, hey, if you got a BTB out there you want to sell me, $570, I'll buy it.
Yeah. So. Or maybe Ibanez could reissue it, make it a signature model.
That would be rad. I made it easy for him.
Yeah, right. You did all the R&D yourself.
This one, a close buddy of mine that I actually met through being on the road, he designs custom guitars. His name is Ryan Liu. L-O-U-X, and that's actually his website is loucustomdesigns.com. He made this for me when we came out with Hats Off to the Bull.
Wow.
It's got, he asked me what, you know, what I was into at the time, and I was doing, I was really into Picasso at the time. I paint a lot of drum heads on the road.
Oh, cool.
And we sell them at the merch table and stuff.
Is it like Guernica?
This one was of a matador getting gored by the bull. So he built this from scratch, and the reason for it in the first place is because he made the Thunderbird better, really. He put a volute on the back of the neck, which those BTBs have as well, which is key. When you have a neck, you know, 35 inch, it takes all the damage here when you do not rack it or something. So that keeps anything from happening. And so it's a 35 scale.
Wow.
And it's not active, so it's still passive. That was the other thing, I couldn't introduce just one guitar into my setup because they were all passive. And when I introduced an active bass into that scenario, it was too different. I couldn't adjust my pack.
Everything changed.
Yeah, I took down the decibel level on the pack, the tone went away.
Right.
You know, so it was an all or nothing kind of switch.
So, a real commitment.
Yeah, so actually I can play these now more than I could before, so.
Yeah. Well, they sound great. We caught your sound check and it's just huge. You can't believe it's just three guys up here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah. You know, we don't really put anything on the record that we can't play live.
Which
as a
is
rule.
So unusual, particularly with a three-piece band, because, I mean...
Right, you end up fluffing up stuff before you know it, yeah.
Right.
I mean, it works with the style of songwriting we have. You know, they're pretty stripped-down songs, kind of vocal and lyrically driven with, you know, more industrial-style drums. I guess not industrial, but I mean, like... kind of built-for-purpose drums and bass,
to
reinforce everything. And Sam and I talk about it a lot. Our whole point is to just kind of show our face maybe once in a song so that we're not constantly looking for openings to do crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Try to just do it once in a smart spot. And, you know, if we can do it, great. But, you know, the worst thing you can do is step on the lyrics.
Right, right. So Dean, tell me about this guy.
This is the A sharp. It's the lowest of our tunings, dropped A sharp. So I chose to have the maple neck for this one because it's got a brighter tone.
Sure.
So when it gets down there, it kind of stands out a little more. You can see on this one, I do this on all my basses because of our lights and everything. When they're kind of screaming at your face.
Yeah.
And on the guitar, you can't really see where you are, especially with a 35 scale, it's a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So these always help me keep on track and find that last minute note.
Right. Man, and that is all neck. I mean, it just goes on forever.
Yep, I really dig them.
Yeah.
They're pretty rad.
Very cool.
Yeah, so I painted this one all white, just painted over everything, so.
Yeah, I love it. What kind of paint do you use? What do you, did you like shoot it with a?
Yeah, so I build furniture at home. That was the business I had before I did music full time.
Yeah.
So I have a spray room and a booth, and I've sprayed furniture for years, so I know. I basically, with these, it's easiest to use a spray paint as the tone of color.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I'll do is I'll hit it with lacquer, satin lacquer over it, because as satin, you know, for the necks, keep it not too sticky.
Right.
But flat would just kind of absorb everything, so I don't go flat, I just kind of keep it satin. And I'll do like three coats of it, and does the job. It does the job. I mean, it's going to get beat up. I want them to look kind of beat up.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of our tool, you know?
Right.
It's like a hammer, so.
Well, mission accomplished. You guys are just beating the crap out of all your stuff.
Yeah.
That's great.
Awesome.
Well, hey, speaking of beating the crap out of things and aesthetics, let's look at these cabinets. So tell me about what you got going on there. First of all, I love the crazy, creepy stuff you have on it.
Yeah, I found him at like a Walmart or something, and he said leave, and I just dug it because he's crotchety.
Perfect. So you're running, these are both Boogie?
Yeah, these are Mesa Boogie cabs. I think that's an 810, and that's a 312 or something. Mm-hmm. But we're just running the 810 right now. And really, he takes the direct signal out in front.
Yeah.
And because really, with the different venues and everything, he has more control running it direct.
Sure, yeah.
And he has two lines, so he can mix in the distortion with the low end depending on what he's getting out there.
Great. And these are completely stock except for the aesthetics of, you know,
yeah, I antiqued everything for this tour.
Yeah.
Which basically means I painted everything to look beat up and rough.
Well, because it's a scary album anyway. I mean, your new album, yeah.
It's supposed to be about, you know, murder and gore.
Ouija is the first song. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I did, you know, Pete's cab over there and all the stuff. I set up his little shrine.
Yeah, they look great. Cool. Well, now I know that delay is a big part of your sound too. Let's talk about your pedal board. Okay, so Dean, you're a bass player that uses a lot of effects live. Why don't you talk a little bit about your board here?
Well, originally I started out really simple. Originally I just, when I first started playing bass for this band 10 years ago, I just had the big block channel changer. But really, I mean, that just keeps it from overdriven or clean on the head, which is the big block 750. I just originally had that and a tuner. And I had I tried a bunch of different pedals for a mid distortion.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, I've found lots of little toys that I like. So I pretty much run the Sans amp the whole show unless there's like one part in a song where I take the Sans amp off, because that just gives it like a little more presence. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of do a post tonal thing with it, and with, it's perfect with those basses. I can really dial it in for the venue I'm in. So I'll have that running the whole time. Then for just a first level distortion, I have this bass driver, this Digitech. So that's kind of the first step up. Then I have these positioned in a way where my foot can switch between them.
You do the double down.
Yeah,
nice.
So that I can go from this distortion, which is my first level, to this distortion, which is the big block distortion. So the amp goes from clean to distortion, which is hotter than this one. Then when I want to take my third step up, which is, so I have the big block on distortion, then I hit my EQ, and that bumps it up to that next level, kind of screaming. And
right.
Then when I really want to punish, I throw the kitchen sink on, which is that, and so they're all three of these on.
That's when the rafters start shaking,
right.
Lights fall out, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I'll throw the digital reverb on too, for scrapes. And,
oh, really, for pick scrapes?
Yeah.
Cool.
So I can do that in different levels too.
Very cool.
I use the delay constantly. Whenever I get the click from Sam before a song, I'll hit the digital delay and get it in tempo with whatever track we're playing.
So you manually set the tap.
I manually set the timing, and then this is how long I want it to go. That's a little different on different songs. And you know, it just keeps a vibe too in between songs. Like he'll go and grab his guitar.
Right.
And or he'll get his guitar from Eric. And meanwhile, I get the click from Sam, and I create the vibe for the next song, the tempo and everything. So it kind of makes a gentle changeover.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, a little segue.
And,
that's cool.
And there are parts that I use it on. I implement it on in the songs. This tuner, I really dig this tuner, because it seems a little more accurate as a strobe tuner.
Mm-hmm.
They made their last version. I really loved too, but it just kept breaking. The quarter inches on it would break, and you don't really want that to happen playing
right.
live, because that's kind of a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
But
and you're running a DI out of.
Yeah, we're running a DI out of that for clean, and then
cool.
I think he has my overdriven running out of my cab. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I love the use of delay. It's particularly with a three-piece band, you just have to cover so much ground.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and I realize that there's a lot of room for it, you know, slowly. But as I kind of was able to cover stuff, I realized, well, I wish, you know, in this part of the song, I wish I had this. And some of the really old songs too, you know,
yeah.
where there's just these pockets where after doing the record too, you're just like, oh, you know, I wish I would have gone more in a direction like that.
Right.
But you can take those chances on stage, and it makes the show better too.
Yeah.
You know, something different.
Yeah, and it gives the fans something different. You know?
Yeah.
It's cool to hear the evolution of a song.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Dean, your amp rig is kind of buried in back, but can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so basically, you know, it's a two-channel big block 750. The clean, there's not really too much to, you know, I just kind of get a basic tone that I've pretty much used this whole tour so far, and
yeah.
It doesn't really change that much. But the distortion changes a lot from my frequency. So I'll be dialing off according to the room, kind of give it, you know, a little more high end on it. Basically, I think it's just dialing out low end, you know, on that frequency
yeah.
part of it. But, and that changes from sound check where there's nobody in the room to when everybody's in the room and I realize that I dialed out the low end and I got to put it back in, and I'll kind of creep around and just get it right.
Oh, really? You do that during the show?
Yeah, I'll do that during the show.
Wow.
And, you know, we also run in-ears, so it's kind of like the combination between what's coming out of my head, the room, and the frequency of the in-ears.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of learned as to if it's a frequency thing in the ears or if it's my amp. And it's usually my amp and the frequency, and I can change that a little bit. And that's an easier fix than going and doing an EQ
sure.
band change on
yeah.
the in-ears. So on the head, this, basically my dials they stay pretty consistent. The overdrive is pretty cranked, but I keep my gain low.
Mm-hmm.
So I get kind of a real crunchy distortion.
Yeah.
And then I have the bass up accordingly, like 3/4. My mids, I keep down almost to about a quarter. I keep those out, dial those out a little bit. And again, I'm still learning with these basses, so nothing's in stone there. It's been 9 years with the Thunderbirds, and yeah. This is making a switch now. But so far, I really haven't to do too much on that end of it. It was mostly, since they're a hotter bass,
yeah.
Just dialing off the overall, the overall distortion or the overall clean on yeah. The masters. And so that fixed that there.
So have you always been a Mesa Boogie guy?
Yeah, Mesa Boogie has been I've been with me since I started.
Yeah, so you and Pete both always Mesa.
Yeah, and This is the same amp that I started with.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you have a backup? Do you carry a backup?
Oh, yeah, I have like four of them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the same setup.
Oh, same, okay.
Yeah,
same not setup. Not literally the
yeah,
same
amp. Yeah, not literally.
You've destroyed...
I've probably destroyed about 20 of those pedals
right.
From stomping on them, but...
Right. So the same model.
Same model. Yeah. And, yeah, Tian is my guy from Mesa Boogie. He's awesome. He's been throwing around the idea of a new head that they're working on, but I haven't had a chance to really to put it in the action yet, so... Okay. When that comes around, it might be out on this tour, maybe, depending on, if I get the call.
Right. Cool.
So.
Well, Dean, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Yeah.
Congratulations, and have a great tour.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay.